Now, the World's Edge is a festival and a kind of journey that obviously that started in New Zealand, and it's kind of a long-held dream of mine as a Kiwi that moved overseas when I was 8 years old, but was sort of lucky that music kept taking me home. And essentially, my kind of burning desire was to be able to start something in New Zealand that would be able to give something back to the sort of New Zealand creative community, and bring some of the people that inspired me from around the world back home to New Zealand. And part of the reason for that is that, New Zealand's geography is it's a long way from everywhere, and it's very much a destination. Like, you don't transit through New Zealand unless you're, like, I don't know, going to Antarctica or something. And so as a result, that kind of like creative traffic and that sort of cross-pollination of ideas is just a bit slower than if you were living in the States or in Europe or Asia. And about like 7 or 8 years ago now, like, I met a fellow violinist in New Zealand, Justine Cormack, who had a sort of similar idea and similar vision for like one specific region in New Zealand, which was the Queenstown Lakes, a culturally underserved part of New Zealand. And it's stunningly beautiful and like has so much going for it, but was known as kind of tourist town, and it's extreme sports and outdoor sports in the summer and skiing in the winter. It's where bungee jumping was invented and things like this. And we kind of realized there was a fantastic opportunity here and also a real need for a cultural event really built from the sort of community in Queenstown upwards. And so we went about figuring out how that started. And then in 2021, or as we call it, AWE, at the World's Edge Festival, was launched. Now, the other kind of side of the Queenstown Lakes community is that it is actually very international. So, like, lots of people sort of spend anything from 3 to 6 months a year in Queenstown and then spend the other half of the year in Europe or New York or Chicago or many different places. So through this journey towards the festival in New Zealand, we ended up connecting around the world. And in my travels as a soloist, particularly, like, with this kind of this international community of patrons and donors. And sometimes they were able to join us for the festival they were supporting in New Zealand, but quite often not, because it was not at the time of year that they were always in New Zealand. So we started sort of going, well, okay, well, how about, is there a way that we can bring a piece of New Zealand, a piece of the festival to these people and their communities overseas, and would there be any interest for that? And we're kind of now at that point, sort of maybe 3, 4 years down the track of exploring that, and Orr now has a US-based nonprofit specifically to support and make that dream possible. And then this year was really the tipping point of being able to kind of really forge a new creative pathway from New Zealand to the United States with Orr Chicago, annual spring chamber music festival based in Chicago, offering a piece of Orr, a piece of New Zealand. And in the long run, we really hope to be able to turn it into kind of a one end of a powerful creative pathway for music and musicians between New Zealand and Chicago.
Yeah, that's exciting. What were you thinking musically in the, in the early days of Awe? Were you thinking it would be mostly traditional chamber music? I know you're going to obviously incorporate some New Zealand composers, but what were the early thoughts programmatically?
Programmatically, like, the key thing was always using the concert experience to really sort of cement the idea that a live performance is something that only happens once. So we wanted to build a trust in Orr as a presenter, as a brand, that, like, whatever's on the program, it's probably worth coming to hear. Like, worth coming and seeing what it is. What's the journey going to be? So right from the beginning, we were presenting works written last year next to works written 200 years ago, and trying to, like, build a context and a sort of creative thread between them, so that people were encouraged to come and listen with open ears. So at the festival, there is always a composer in residence, and we commission a new piece from them every year. And their works are also worked into every performance in the festival, so that if an audience member comes to one concert or two concerts or all of the concerts, they walk away with, like, a kind of a concept of, like, what that particular composer's musical languages like and the way they think about things. So it was really kind of really about sort of drawing connections between things and sort of getting away from this idea that it's all about a handful of, guys who lived 300 years ago, like they, did fantastic things, but more about kind of like presenting it all in one sort of holistic context, if that makes sense.
We're hearing from Benjamin Baker, who is a violinist and also the founding artistic director of AWE at World's Edge, a wonderful festival in New Zealand and Chicago, and with ambitions of going elsewhere as well. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted. I had a really great opportunity to hear two of the three concerts as part of the AWE Festival in Chicago a few months ago, and I was completely blown away by the quality of performing, by the sensitive curating. It was just a fantastic festival. I had met Ben a little ways before that, and we hit it off quite well. And so it's just a real honor to have him on the program today and to feature this really wonderful festival. I opened up the program with a piece called Yabo by Selina Fischer for violin and viola. We heard Ben on violin, and we heard Matthew Lippmann on viola. And this piece was inspired by Japanese court instruments. Selina Fischer's heritage is part from Japanese, part New Zealand. And so she was inspired by these ancient court instruments, especially the sho, which is a bamboo flute originally from China. I believe it went to Japan somewhere in the 8th or 9th century. So these are ancient instruments here that are inspiring that wonderful sound she gets out of the violin and viola. I am going to play music now by Hugh Watkins. This is a string trio called String Trio Number 2, and it's in six movements. I'm going to play several of the movements. I'm going to start with the first movement, and then we'll go back to hearing from Ben, more about the festival and a little bit about this piece by Hugh Watkins, and I'll break it up with different movements of that piece, String Trio Number 2.
So the early audiences were people that were not necessarily familiar with classical music. I mean, there were people who were maybe bungee jumping on Wednesday and doing things like that, and then checking out one of your concerts on the weekend?
Totally. So I mean, it was kind of wonderful. Everything from the volunteers at the festival through to people coming to the concerts. They would come to a concert and then like throw themselves down a hill on a mountain bike straight afterwards. It was kind of like this was really the it was the most wonderful kind of refreshing reality check, really. Because if you'd asked anyone in New Zealand like 5, 6, 7 years ago about Queenstown, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, great place, but there's no classical music audience there," and part of what we do is we went, was about kind of basically proving that wrong, and also year by year coming back and essentially helping to build that. Because part of the problem was that also because of the tourist trade, it was quite a fractured community, and there was no real sort of focal point, or obviously like a community needs as many focal points as possible to come together and like get to know each other and exchange ideas and all this kind of stuff. And like Queenstown was really lacking that. And just year by year with what we've done in Queenstown, that we've just seen that building in a really, really heartening and exciting way. And yeah, like actually this year, so the festival in New Zealand has like we have like three inspiring Kiwis that are kind of like woven through our program, and one of them is woven through very deeply because he is our composer in residence. But the other is going to appear, the other two are going to appear in talks talking about their connections to music, connections into nature, which is sort of our theme for the year and in the program, and how that interacts with their work. And those other two Kiwis, one is a Olympic freestyle skier, and the other is one of New Zealand's foremost architects. But they've kind of come into the orbit of the festival over the years, and this year was just kind of wonderful. We're able to kind of to actually like highlight some of those conversations and some of those connections that perhaps we wouldn't always think about when we think of like a bunch of musicians sitting on stage playing some music that was written by someone yesterday or 10 years ago or 100 years ago. Hugh Watkins is a composer that like I've loved his music for a long, long, long time. And this was a piece or actually co-commissioned with a chamber music festival in Wales. And so it was just kind of really wonderful for all to be able to be a part of the kind of the creation of this wonderful piece of music. And Hugh doesn't he doesn't write a lot about what inspires him or like what was in his mind when he was writing, but I think it's a really beautifully constructed piece in six movements, and it's sort of got like a kind of got an arch to it that it sort of begins and ends with similar material. So there's yeah there's sort of yeah a really really beautiful architecture to it, and I wouldn't kind of venture any further to prescribe more than that and see what people think of it.
Some composers are, they want to write absolute music and not tell you a bunch of things they were thinking about.
It's true, and I suppose it's that thing too, isn't it? That like every composer has their own process. And for some people, like there's very, like they almost like they thrive off a brief, or they thrive off like really specific things for specific pieces that inspired them. And I think for others, it's probably the opposite of that.
Well, that's kind of the thing you have to learn as a composer, not only what your voice is and what you're trying to say, but also, I mean, George Crumb, for example, didn't really write orchestra music, I mean, he wrote one or two pieces, but he was really, really, really good at chamber music. And you kind of have to just know what your specialty is, and yeah, some composers specialize in miniatures. I mean, same as writers, right? Some people are really good short story writers, others are long form, others do 600 word columns for a newspaper. It's the same thing as a composer.
Spoken as a yeah spoken very eloquently as a composer.
No,
Much better than
I'm
ever
still
I could
figuring
think.
it out. Is it similar as a violinist? I mean, you say, okay, I'm just not going to play, Baroque music at the same level that I can play other types of music.
Absolutely. And I think and yeah and I think for all of us as like as interpreters, I said I often feel like I'm a messenger between, the sort of the sonic imagination of the composer who's tried to put, dots on a page as a communication to me of like to try and, recreate what was in his mind. And I sort of, as I get older, more and more, I think like actually dots on a page is a really crude way of trying to articulate someone's imagination, and like it's there's not very many options really, like with its dots on a stave with a key signature and a few markings. But it does, I think for us as performers, like it does mean that you the more time you have with any particular composer's music, you understand their internal logic more. And so it's natural that over time you it's not necessarily even about a personal affinity towards certain composers. It's more that like you gradually build a deeper understanding of said could be certain time periods or certain composers within that, and also what your particular skill set is on the instrument. Some people are extraordinary with some really extreme contemporary, whether it be sort of contemporary techniques and things like this. Others like can capture that period sound of something that was written in the 17th century in a way that I know I really couldn't, because I haven't put the time into really like discovering that in my own playing. So no, absolutely, it's very much there's definitely similarities on the playing side, and I think it's kind of important that we all keep challenging ourselves to expand on like what we do, but at the same time acknowledging, where our strengths and weaknesses are. Selina Fisher is actually was our first composer in residence at the festival in New Zealand. And so one of the pieces is a string trio called Mata O. And this was the piece that Orr commissioned in 2021. And Mata O is the Maori name for the Clutha River in New Zealand's South Island. And it was first performed overlooking Lake Wanaka, which is the source of the Clutha River. And so the idea, the Clutha is like the second longest river in New Zealand. And it's based on the idea of new beginnings and that idea of like a great body of water, just beginning to move on a long journey. But there's sort of one other side of it too, and this is very much a sign of how Selena thinks about things, is that she's of New Zealand and Japanese heritage, and it just happens that Mata O is a homophonous phrase in Japanese meaning to meet again. And so that was kind of her, the other side of like her inspiration, like sort of yeah, bringing together the two sides of her heritage.
I was just thinking about the name. You know, when I think of At World's Edge Festival, to me it's very exotic, right? Because I'm sitting here in Chicago, you know, and I know what you mean when you think about New Zealand being isolated, you know. So At World's Edge, you're like, wow, that's cool. You know, I want to check that out. But what does it mean to somebody in Queenstown? Because that's where they live. That you know, they're used to being there. What do you think the title of the festival would mean to somebody there?
It's a really good question. I mean, it's definitely something that we've fielded, like a question we fielded quite a lot with supporters and friends in New Zealand. And the truth is that like the idea of being at the edge, when you think of New Zealand, the first thing we think of is geographic. But the truth is that in that word too, like there's actually an opportunity in that kind of geographic isolation, that there is more space, and that does sort of manifest, I believe, in the way Kiwis look at things and particularly go about problem solving, in that there's kind of a there's an open-mindedness and a willingness to just give things a go, give things a try, in a way that's a little different than it might be in Europe or the United States, which are older countries, and it's, you know, there's less space and it's more competitive and everyone's sort of living much busier lives. And so kind of that idea of being at the edge, of sort of being willing to take yourself to the edge and, you know, sort of take a leap of faith with a new experience, or, you know, like coming to a concert that you have no idea what's on of anything on the program and just seeing what it is, that was something we see as quite a Kiwi trait. Truth being told too, is that actually the other side creatively is obviously our acronym is AWE, and that idea of awe, something, you know, kind of something awe-inspiring, that kind of that idea of feeling sort of insignificant in the sort of shadow of greatness or of great beauty or anything like this, is that exists everywhere we kind of aspire to create it or aspire to find it. And so in that way, the world has like more than one edge. And that's kind of like what we're really excited to start exploring with All Chicago, is like what that could mean for Chicago, and sort of see where that road leads.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, you know. I mean, taking a festival or a concept from one place to and transplanting it to a very different place is always interesting, you know. But especially with this concept of awe and at world's edge, I think. Yeah, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, I want to check that out, you know. I like being in awe of things. And you know, and I mean, there's something about New Zealand too, because anybody who travels, you know, when you stay in a hostel when you're young, yeah, I mean, it feels like a quarter of the people you meet are Kiwis, you know. I mean, New Zealanders really get around, right? You know.
Totally. We do seem to spread everywhere.
Well, I think that's, you know, like there's almost a mandate, you know, that when you're young as a New Zealander, you should really travel because of the isolation, right? I mean, that's what how it's been explained to me anyway, that you know, my parents basically told me, you know, spend part of your 20s traveling abroad, you know, because you need to see the world because we're so isolated. I mean, is that more or less how people are taught?
I mean, that's the thing. I'm not sure if it's something that people are taught as much as kind of something that's just kind of intrinsically felt by anyone kind of growing up in New Zealand and wanting to figure out how the world works. It's like so much of New Zealand culture is a product of the many communities and cultures that has sort of come to New Zealand over time, and that of course like begins with the original Maori settlers, like in the sort of 1500s, right through to Europeans, in the 1700s and 1800s. And so we like just take something like the celebration of Christmas. Like in New Zealand, I remember growing up, and like Christmas is the middle of summer for us, but we have all the same Christmas carols as the Northern Hemisphere that are all set in winter. So, whereas like everyone's sort of, you know, huddling around log fires and Christmas carols and you know, I don't know, like eggnog and mince pies and all this kind of stuff. It's like we're having shrimps on a barbie on the beach, but we don't have like we don't have Christmas stories involving that. So there's sort of an element of like so much of like the way we look at the world is through a lens that is borrowed from the Northern Hemisphere, but we don't get to like interact regularly with that sort of like heritage. So I think yeah, like I think most young people in New Zealand are just like, yeah, I want to go and get like my own authentic experience of these things, rather than you know the kind of the experience of parents and all that kind of thing. And it's also probably quite hard. I think there is a feeling in New Zealand too when you're there. It's a country of like just over 5 million people spread over quite a large landmass, like not large for the States, but if you compare it, say, to like the British Isles and the UK, this thing is probably like 40-ish percent bigger by land area. Takes a long time to get around. So people are very spread out. And there is a like there is a kind of there is a feeling of isolation in a way that like I don't think it's probably possible to have felt if you say grew up in London or the East Coast of the US or you know sort of like these big metropolitan areas where you're not surrounded by like a million people. It's like tens of millions.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm so glad I asked that question because I love what you just said, and that idea of this cognitive dissonance. You know, I mean, you know, yeah, singing about things that you don't experience yourself firsthand. That's pretty wild. I was just thinking we should work together, ACM and AWE, and commission some New Zealand composers to musically explore this cognitive dissonance.
I think it would be really, really powerful because that's the thing. Like, I feel like through creativity, it does connect us all. Like, ideas don't begin in a vacuum. You know, no one's. I mean, I don't believe anyone like could claim that they sort of sat in a room not exposed to anything, and then like came up with a genius idea that went on to like inspire people or change the way the world works. Like, it's a constant process of like challenge and communication and being sort of inspired by sort of what others are doing, and so you know like I think that's where like through music we can you know there's huge potential of you know is it something inspired by you know the architecture of something in Chicago like but written from a musical language and from a sort of creative perspective of someone from New Zealand or the other way around and sort of yeah that's the thing who knows. Who knows what might be created through such you know, kind of like powerful raw materials, I suppose.
I'm going to close out the program with a performance of a piece called Four Postcards by composer Gareth Barr. We're going to hear Ben Baker on violin with Oliver Herbert cello. So first, let's hear Ben talk a little bit about the piece, and then we'll give it a listen.
Gareth Barr was our second composer in residence in 2022, and Four Postcards for Violin and Cello was kind of inspired actually by the first piece Gareth ever wrote about the Queenstown Lakes, which was a piece for solo violin for an international violin competition that happens in New Zealand every 2 years called the Michael Hill International Violin Competition. And Gareth wrote it for that. And the early round of the competition happens in Queenstown and they move to Auckland, one of basically the biggest city in New Zealand for the final rounds. And this piece was inspired by Lake Waikatipu. But when Gareth wrote it, he'd actually never been to Queenstown. So he basically wrote the whole he wrote the whole piece looking at pictures of Queenstown and of Lake Waikatipu. And so when it came to him writing the second piece inspired by or like or for Queenstown, which was this four cards, four postcards, he's like, well, what if we kind of like now I have been there and I have actually seen around, and this piece was performed in Queenstown and in our sort of other festival locations in other sort of other towns in this like Queenstown Lakes basin. He was like, well, okay, so what if you have like four movements each with like different images or postcards of this like extraordinarily beautiful part of New Zealand. But the one thing he said is that he's not going to tell us what his imagery was for each of the postcards, because potentially we can all come up with our own, which, always has the potential to be more meaningful and more powerful to each of us. But that's his four postcards, and I really love playing those.
That's all the time we have on the program today. Hope you enjoyed it very much. I certainly enjoyed talking to Ben. He's doing very, very exciting things. He's a wonderful violinist and a really great curator and programmer. I had the good fortune to see a couple of the AWE Festival events in Chicago, as I mentioned, and they're just absolutely fantastic. So continued good fortune to Ben Baker and to AWE, and thanks so much for being on the program today. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. And of course, you can hear all of our podcasts wherever you listen to your podcasts, or you can go to relevanttones.com as well. And if you're in Chicago, check out The Checkout at thecheckout.org. Gee, ACM has a lot of URLs now. At any rate, on behalf of Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.